Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impogam. This evening, we'll talk about elections in Africa post-coronavirus. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macori, Managing Editor, Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. He's joining us from Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
You're very much welcome. As I said, we're talking about elections in Africa post-coronavirus. The virus has complicated the election year calendar for Africa, as elsewhere, prompting some polling delays, suspensions, and uncertainties. It has also created openings for leaders to exploit fears and tighten their grips on power, according to many political observers. At least 9 African countries, including Nigeria, Kenya, and Zimbabwe, have postponed elections at some level. Then Ethiopia has indefinitely delayed national, parliamentary, and regional voting, originally set for August 29th. A unique case is Uganda, where they have decided to go what they call scientific voting, which implies no campaigning, no rallies, but just vote digitally. So let's start from there. Vincent, what do you make of all this?
To begin with, I can say that these are very strange times, and in some respects, one would expect that things will not operate as normal as we would have expected. So when it comes, for example, to determining whether elections should be postponed or should be conducted in another way, it might look reasonable in different countries, depending on the situation in every country. Countries are thinking of measures they can put in place to save lives, because essentially COVID-19 can kill people. Now, when you go to the Uganda case, yes, perhaps a postponement could make sense if everybody feels that holding an election in this kind of state of affairs might be too risky, and therefore we have to think of how to do it and when to do it. The biggest problem is that there is no collaboration and consultation with the other political players. Any time where the decision seems to favor one side, when it's apparently unilateral, even if the Electoral Commission chairperson is the one saying this. But then when you consider that the opposition in Uganda is very, very fundamentally disadvantaged because of the inability to access, especially the rural population, through what they say is the digital way. For example, they are saying the campaigns can only be done through the media. Now, you cannot have a campaign successfully through the media if those other political parties do not have equal access to the media. When the government ensures that it has muzzled the freedoms of private media and that only gives prominence to the ruling party in the national broadcasting systems, you cannot guarantee a free and fair election. So if the Ugandan opposition cannot campaign on an equal playing ground with the ruling party, that election will not be free and fair. So what needed to have happened is all parties sit together, along with the Electoral Commission, and determine how best to conduct the election and when to conduct this election, and then look at the existing structures and say, how do we want to do it? If we do it this way, do we have the structures and the systems that first will favor all the political players, all the political parties, so that the election will be free and fair? If we don't have them, what do we need in order to build that? If you're going to allow, for example, to say that the campaign will only be through the media, does everybody have equal access, equal airtime on the national broadcaster? Does everybody have equal access to the media that broadcast to the rural areas, to the distant parts of Uganda? So if that does not exist, which from what I've analyzed does not exist, this election will be favoring the ruling party and President Museveni, definitely, now that the party he's saying they have already fronted his name, this election is likely to be a one-man show, as far as I'm concerned.
I see. Suleiman, Vincent there seems to give the benefit of doubt to the Ugandan government, and assuming that maybe one way they are doing this is because they want to save lives. What's your take? Because Uganda is a country that doesn't have a single death from coronavirus yet. And the total cases tested are less than 1,000. So, and the election is months away. So why decide now to...
Exactly. You've got it, Douglas. To begin with, let's take away the fiction, the facts from fiction. Number one, the disease is not going away tomorrow. Number two, the cure cannot be got tomorrow. Number three, even if the cure was to be got tomorrow, most of these countries, especially we in Africa, will not be able to procure the necessary amounts and to administer those the cure immediately. Number four, we are not, our numbers, as you have said, on the continent, they are not yet worrying apart from South Africa and some few countries in North Africa. Otherwise, our numbers are not worrying. Number four, the numbers worldwide are also not worrying. We are almost going to half a million. Half a million are the people who died in Rwanda for the genocide. Half a million is far less than the people who are killed during the war which brought Mr. Museveni, the one in Uganda, to power. The war which brought Museveni to power took about 800,000 people. From there, when he started, before he could settle in power, the northern part of it, the civil war that ensued, took another 1 million. So today, we have not yet lost, the Ugandan people have not yet lost a single person as a result of COVID. And then that is why, by and large, many of the African countries have decided not to tamper with the elections. For example, as we said, Burundi has already gone. KZ, for sure, they have declared they are going to have their normal election. Ghana has not thought of postponing it. Ivory Coast has not thought of postponing it. As you have said, Malawi has just completed and it has run smoothly. After those which have gone, have run, and there are no bodies which have fallen on the streets of Burundi yet, and people are still continuing, we can't see much anticipation to put the measures, which those who are putting measures are putting, especially those who are postponing without proper reasons, those who are... And then the case of Uganda was saying he's giving, but he's giving on certain conditions. So as a bottom line, I'm saying that there should be a strong point to justify the giving, either the postponement indefinite, if it is to be indefinite, or to give definite reasons. To postpone, to prepare properly, that one is understandable. But now, if we go to the Ugandan case, where it is not postponed, but it is going to be carried on under very difficult circumstances, one asks, why has Uganda decided to do
if it
has done?
Yes, obviously.
Yes, and actually I wasn't necessarily holding brief here for the Ugandan government. What I was saying is that if all the parties involved sat together and deliberated on this issue and concluded that there is need and necessity to postpone, that will be valid. And if they do agree that there's need to postpone to a later date, then they have to make sure that they're doing it so that they can put together structures that will make that particular election a free, fair, and credible election. So if you got it, that's the point I was making, that you cannot you cannot unilaterally make a postponement. You cannot also determine how it's going to be done when you do not, when the other side does not have the advantages that you have. So what I was saying is that if Uganda had come, brought together all the involved parties you know, Chagulani's and BCJ's, and they all sit together with Museveni and the Electoral Commission, and they discuss this thing at length.
Mm.
Then they reach an agreement. The next conversation would have been, okay, then, how are we going to do it? And therefore, for example, those suggestions that have been made, including doing it electronically, no public campaign, then they had to make sure that all those involved have equal access to the media. At the moment as it is not a fair playing ground because the other parties do not have equal access to the media. They do not have equal access to the populace, the populations across the country. Therefore, that's why I'm saying, while perhaps there could have been a legitimate reason to do it, it hasn't been done properly.
I see.
Therefore, this is an election that is skewed towards President Museveni.
I see. You make a good point there. You emphasize access to, equal access to the media.
Yeah.
Ironically, in Uganda, apart from the national broadcast has a poor record because in the past elections, it's been biased. Okay, there was even a case in court where Besigye complained and won some award because they referred to refund his money because they refused to give him equal airtime. And then another issue is that most private FM stations are owned by government officials, ministers, members of parliament. Suleiman, how possible is it that they could decide to share their owned media with the opposition?
First of all, I have been resistant 100%. The manner in which the whole election is going to be held, actually, they are not even going to hold a free and fair election. To begin with, listen, I said, point number one, there was no consultation with the stakeholders. As Vicenta said, the political parties were not consulted to come up with a roadmap which is acceptable to all. That is point number one. Point number two, the Electoral Commission itself, which is carrying on the election, is contested, is not trusted by some parties. Number three, the one of the participants, the president himself, Mr. Museveni, has got no track record of accepting democracy. His participation itself is a contested part. He had to fight his way to adjust, to amend the constitution. So when you see what is being done, going back to what you are saying, Douglas, you can see that Uganda is not holding election to have a free and fair election. It is holding a PR exercise to justify the going back home into power. Because every condition is pointing to an unfair election. First of all, as you have said, the record, the track record of media, even before the elections were announced, the opposition politicians were not being allowed in radio stations, on the TVs. In many areas, when they go to Chagulani, they are pulled out of the studio. All the radios are refused to host them, much as they have paid. So when will you change the mindset? The Electoral Commission does not have radio stations for themselves. Number two, the radio stations, as you have said, Douglas, the ownership, 99.9% of the radio stations are owned by people who support Mr. Museveni. There is no opposition who has ever been allowed to open up a radio station. They have tried so many times, they were refused the licenses. So those radios belong to the government supporters. How are they going to allow the opposition leaders to go on those radio stations? Number three, even if they were to allow them, you have got members of parliament who are about 400. The radio station are around 120 something. So how are you going to put this one? In short, let me put it this way. The radio stations are not enough for the contestants. Because you may find members of parliament, you need about 400 members of parliament. But you may find a position which has got 5 candidates, 7 candidates. How are you going to program them to put them on the air? Number two, the radio, the signals don't circulate in the whole country. There are so many countries which do not receive signals, radio signals. Another reason, not everybody is connected to a radio. You may find there are so many poor people who don't have radio. How are they going to listen? So there are so many factors. Number four, from the roadmap which they are giving, another very, very important point. They want the candidates, prospective candidates, for example, for presidential, by the end of this month. There is no time for the internal democracies to take place. Even the internal democracies, not only for presidential, even for members of parliament, you find that some of the political parties, they need to have internal elections so that they get candidates. You may find that in a particular political party, they have got maybe 3 candidates. For example, like last year, in the last election in Uganda, remember, one of the political parties had 2 candidates for presidential, and they had to go into a primary election within the political party itself to get one flag bearer. So when are they going? They want these candidates by the end of the month. So if you look at the whole program, the way it has been led by the Uganda Electoral Commission, you can see a country which is not going into an election to have a free and fair election, but which already has a candidate who has already won, but they want a PR exercise to show that there are even some other people participating. Otherwise, the ground is not leveled at all for the opposition in Uganda.
I see.
So, as I said, this would have been to consult the various political parties, sit down, do a roadmap, look at the modalities, and then see whether you don't need to postpone it a little bit, have internal election, have all the possible ways of having rallies, and then carry on with the free and fair election. Otherwise, for now, there is no election in Uganda. It's just a show.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, this is The Voice of America, and you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. Our topic tonight is elections in Africa post-coronavirus. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Makori, managing editor of VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, the South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Washington. So, Vincent, you just heard what Suleiman has alluded to there and pointed out a number of issues. Okay, you seem to agree that this one, there should have been consultations with the stakeholders, which didn't happen. But again, Uganda and elsewhere, others have taken advantage by using postponement because you remember there were reports earlier on as the coronavirus began that the president had said there will be no elections because of the coronavirus. Now they have come up with these scientific elections. Is postponement a way of illegal extending some people in power?
You know, as it has been across the continent, always the incumbent looks for any loophole to get an advantage over his opponents in any election. So if postponement is one of those, yes, they will do it. And in most of these cases where there have been announcements of postponement, there are suspicions that it is just one way of the ruling party to find a way of ensuring that they win the next election. Well, there are others who have opined that a postponement, if it is well-intended, if the intention is positive, can help the next election to be fair. An example is in Ethiopia. When Ethiopia's government electoral body announced that they will postpone the elections, the national elections, they said the opposition reacted differently than, for example, in other parts of the continent. The opposition in Ethiopia says, and that's the Oromo Liberation Front, OLF, along with the other party, the national movement of Amhara and Nama, they said they would not oppose the delay. They would be okay with it. But the government and the Electoral Commission has to ensure that if the election is being postponed and the period between now and the election, there has to be a conversation of what will be done to ensure that when these elections will be held, they will be free and fair. Mm. And some analysts say, yes, if that postponement is done in a, with a good intention, you can actually use that period to fix all the necessary loopholes that normally lead to an abortion election. Mm-hmm. If the intention is good, then all the sides will sit down and work together and say, you know what, perhaps let's use this time to make sure that the process will be smooth, the process will be fair, and the process will be credible. But as we know the history of elections in Africa, the incumbent never has any intention whatsoever of ensuring that they fix anything that leads to a botched election until they are forced, as we've seen in Malawi, or as it was in Kenya, which is very rare, they are forced to nullify an election. But there's never, I've never seen a ruling party saying, please, let's fix our electoral system. And so to finalize that thought, yes, a postponement could be beneficial only if the intention is positive and if all the sides, the political players are involved in that decision and if that moment of postponement is used to fix and streamline the systems for electoral, the election process.
I see. Suleiman, if Vincent thought there, many people agree with that one. The trouble is it could work in a country where the current leadership has been in power for a relatively short time. But in countries where the man has been in power for 34 some years, like Museveni has been, or Paul Biya, for instance, if he said he wants a postponement, people, it raises some eyebrows. Don't you think so?
Douglas, and this into 100% right. For the dictators who have been in power for more than 10 years, COVID or no COVID, any election which is to be held is supposed to be rigged. For example, in Uganda, Museveni was not supposed to be on the ballot box, but he changed the constitution through blood and swords. So whether there was COVID or no COVID, he was supposed to go back again in power because that is what he has to do. The Electoral Commission, the three quarters of the Electoral Commission are his village mates. So how do you expect all his tribe mates? How do you expect a free and fair election? Three quarters of the people. Now, another thing which we need to know that in these dictatorial countries, the Electoral Commission and the government, whatever they are doing, they give an impression. For example, when you look at what is done in Uganda, they are giving an impression that they are doing a favor to the people of Uganda to hold an election. They don't see it as a responsibility which they have to carry it on behalf of the people of Uganda. That is why, Vincent, they can come up with a program without consulting the majority of Ugandans because they take it as a favor. Number two, let there be no doubt whatsoever that what is being done, the mode of election which is being engineered, is meant to protect the lives of the people of Uganda. A dictator like Museveni, a dictator like Biya, in so many countries, you can't tell me that they are so much concerned about the lives of Ugandans. Museveni has had, in his lifetime, I'm sure about 2 million Ugandans have died. Mm-hmm. Now we have not lost one. You mean today is when he's so concerned about the death of Ugandans? No, the elections are being held because he wants to give the impression that he's a democratic person, which is not. Otherwise, I agree with Vincent. A postponement, if it was a free and fair election, the people of Uganda would have been consulted. Like the people of Malawi, when the May elections were nullified in Malawi, The court highlighted a number of shortcomings which were there. Number one, they agreed together. The court agreed together with the civil society and the majority of Malawians that the Electoral Commission was incompetent. The president appointed a new Electoral Commission, and it came into place. They realized that with elections which were held, with a marginal winning, it is not right. They should have a 50-plus-1 system. And they rectified it. And then they had campaigns as normal, and then they rectified all those anomalies which were there. They got a new electoral commission, which looks to be independent. They rectified that one. The winner will have to be 50 plus other adjustments which have done. Mm-hmm. As we are having the elections, as on the day of elections in Malawi, the political parties, the opposition political parties were satisfied with the processes, the way they were going. The ruling party was satisfied. Actually, in Malawi, what is so ironical is that the ruling party, the incumbent president, is complaining more than the opposition. He put in complaints to the new electoral body before even the opposition, which shows you that the level in Malawi was grounded. That time which they were given, the gap which was given, did well to adjust the system. And you can see that they have just had a rather free and fair election, unless things crop up. Otherwise, with Malawi, we can give them a thumb up.
Okay, obviously we're running out of time, but in conclusion, so do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic may have made it more difficult for African democracies to thrive?
Oh yes, without a doubt, the opposition has been very restrained. So even for those who would have pushed a little bit more, the opportunity was lost, and the ruling parties were very excited because now they are the only players in this game. The opposition has been totally limited. I mean, whether it's in Uganda, whether it's in Tanzania, anywhere, the opposition right now doesn't have much of a platform.
I see. Suleiman, just 20 seconds.
For a democratic country, COVID is not an excuse not to have elections. Elections can be held. Adjustments need to be done with a consultation. I hope the people of Ghana are going to do the same. I hope the people of Ivory Coast are going to be the same. Like in Malawi, they should be able to carry on a free and fair election. In Uganda, there is no free and fair election already. It is a rigged election, because in Uganda, the situation is like telling people that you are going to have elections in the sky. When no opposition has got transport to go to the sky, it is only a president who has got a helicopter who can go to the sky.
I see.
So
well,
in the Ugandan situation, it is unfair, and the politician cannot get the opportunity to have a real election. It is just a fake election, just like there's so many deceptions which Museveni has carried on his campaign.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, and that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor, Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, independent political analyst based in South Africa. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can still access this program if you go to our main website and click on Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@unnews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga.
Message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hi, this is Larry London. You are invited to join me every day for Border Crossings. This is unprecedented times that we're all faced with. Everybody's at home. Everybody's sitting and wondering what the future will hold once this COVID-19 virus is under control on a worldwide level. Well, in the meantime, I'm here to help you forget about the problems going on outside.